Welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Calabrese, former CPG founder turned executive who finally woke up one day, 16 years into my career, and decided to take back my power and build a community for women in CPG. Tune in as we break down strategies that successful female entrepreneurs are using to build their businesses and talk about what it's like to be a woman in a male-dominated industry. You'll hear stories of the people who make shit happen, overcoming struggles, and celebrating the wins. Whether you're looking for inspiration, industry secrets, or life-changing insights, this is the place. My guest today is a person that's become a dear friend over the last few years, Kelly Meyer. I found her on I Love Creatives a few years ago when I was looking for a social media strategist, and I interviewed a ton of people. She really stood out to me as being a true master of her trade. And not only is she incredibly fluent in social strategy, content execution, community management, voice and tone, etc., but she's also a talented marketing generalist who truly understands the art of marketing to support sales. So she worked in-house for brands across a number of different industries like fashion, beauty, CPG, real estate. And about 5 years ago, she went off on her own and started what she calls a quote-unquote micro agency, Muse Digital Strategies. You can find her on Instagram at Muse Digital Strategies. And in our conversation today, we really unpack what it takes to be successful on social media and talk through why she thinks that brands should hold off on TikTok at the beginning, especially if budgets are tight. So this is an interesting point of view for sure. And we go through how to maximize resources with limited budgets and really so much more. So without further ado, my fabulous guest, Kelly Meyer. Kelly Meyer, hi. I am so excited to have you on.
Talked about this, I feel like, for a minute. So we're like ready to go and here to do this.
And it's like finally happening. I know. I'm just like so excited for all of the...
There's a lot of good things in store
to come. So first question that I'm asking all of our guests is, what are you currently hustling for?
Well, I love this question, but I'm actually trying to hustle differently. So I like it, that. But I'm really trying to kind of like spin that. I have really tried the last year to understand and to really appreciate the work-life balance and what that actually means. So my year has been less focused on the day-to-day of the typical hustle, and I've really tried to find the balance in the work-life balance part a little bit more. So spend a month in Paris trying to learn a language, travel more, be out more, you know, work on new projects, you know, find that creative infusion in life and really try to decentralize work from what it was.
Yes.
Not to say that it's not still my focus, but just really like finding the sustainable flow of work. So I guess I see that as kind of like the anti-hustle, but, you know, hustle nonetheless.
So, okay, why, I'm just curious, like, why do you think that there's so much talk around, I love that you brought up work-life balance, because I was just having this discussion with my husband the other day about, he loves to go in the office and I'm just like so anti. I've worked my entire career in an office and I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
But like, why do you think that there is such a huge movement around work-life balance right now? And like people finding, because his whole hang up is like, there's so much culture around being in an office and like, he's missing that connection with people. I just don't feel that way.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I've worked for myself for 5 years now, so I haven't had culture in what feels like eons, so couldn't tell you what it looks like. But I think there are some people that thrive in that environment, and that was certainly – there was a time that that was very much me. I was the first person in the office, last one to leave.
Like,
thrived on, like, you know, what's a lunch break? Like, really loved, you know, loved that dynamic. And when you have the stamina for that, like, by all means, like, that works for you. Like, do you, boo. But I just think it's, like – what COVID brought about for many people, or if you've been freelance for a while, you come to understand that like having work fit into your life and your day to me is like the return on that is incredible. I certainly have my own like toxic behaviors that I think are that have replaced like toxic work culture of like being in an office and sitting there. You know, I feel like I'm like always on, or you get like your different dynamics. There's yin and yang of everything. But I think that what I've really appreciated about just not having that traditional sense is that I can do my grocery shopping on an off day, but Sundays I maybe check in and do my work then, like just taking and let, again, me and my importance this year of trying to find work-life balance, allowing life to flow in, you know, synergy with what my life looks like, and not having work and life just kind of like it's one or the other.
Yeah.
I think it's made me a better more productive person, but I also think it's one of those things, like it has to work for everyone. So some people, like, again, if you want that work culture, but I do think, I don't know, I'm one of those people that I see those, you know, the guy that's kind of out of touch with his company, like the CEOs of like those Fortune, you know, 500 companies are like, we're never getting rid of the office. And I'm like, you are so out of touch with your team.
Feel. Yeah.
I do think that, you know, the centralized office model will go away in the next 10 years. Like, I think it'll be, I don't think it's going to be everyone works remotely, but I think there will be some sort of hybrid middle ground that we're all going to land
in. What
in.
About how Amazon just brought all those people back? Like Amazon is requiring now, which is crazy. It seems like such a step backwards. I know
100%.
Not to divert too far. I know no, we're like
I definitely
taking a left turn, but.
I think it's so fascinating though. I live for this stuff. I don't know. I think there's like, you know, with COVID and just different dynamics that have come about in just culture, I think that we're in for a massive shift. I just think it's inevitable. And there's always, I certainly think that people are going to be like, wow, I miss going in an office like in 30 years. And it could certainly cycle back. Like who knows what that looks like. But I do think that like the work, the we used to have the 9 to 5 and then it became 9 to 11 or whatever. Like that can't continue to evolve and not have the way that you that work looks like also change. So I just think that that's, you know, so many people are starting their own businesses. So many people are freelance. Like we have decentralized the workforce. And so I just think it's like guaranteed. So peace be with you to the guy that's sitting in the office.
And for like, you look at you stack up the amount of hours you spend commuting. And like for most people, it's like eight hours a week. Like,
oh, I used to do an hour and a half each way.
Oh my God. I desperately need those 8 hours. Like those 8 hours are the difference.
Totally.
Of me picking up my kids, of me making dinner for everybody, of me taking 100%. People to activities, of walking my dog and working out. Like, and those things for me now are just total non-negotiables.
Well, like, I think when you look at it too, and I don't know the exact stats, but I know that women are becoming the larger gender in the workforce. So if women are going to continue to run the majorities of their households, I think that that also is driving the shift, right? Like women have to pick up kids, you know, there, I would say that I don't have children, but I assume that women are still the primary, you know, parents in their household. And so if they have to adapt to more of them working and still maintaining those typical, you know, motherly duties, I think that's going to drive that anyway. So like, I would really dare any CEO up in his, you know, glass office to go up against a mom and tell her like how her schedule is going to go. I don't know. My mom still scares me and I'm 34. So like, I wouldn't expect that to go down well as a conversation. So again, peace be with you to the CEO that thinks that is going to last. But
I know,
I just think that, I don't know. I think there's a major reckoning for women in general right now.
It's interesting. It really is. Mm-hmm. I know. So Kelly, tell us about your journey into marketing and social. So just as like a context for everybody, Kelly is like my go-to as it relates to everything, marketing, strategy, social, et cetera. And I really like lean on you so much for support with that. So share with us just like your journey and how you got into doing what it is that you do.
Whatever it is so that I do every day. Yeah. I feel like I was like the only route I could go was marketing because I have been like a shopper my whole life. So I always used to say that I had to go into marketing. It's like the cycle needed to just complete. Like I am the ultimate consumer. So I needed to also like work for consumers. There really was no other option. I come from a family of all accountants. So I am like the black sheep of the family too. So I think it's like a wild left turn. But I was like marketing all the way, certainly in college, like had my, you know, I don't know if this fits me kind of thing.
Really?
Oh yes. Existential crises.
Just what were you going to do?
What was I considering? I was like, do I go into nutrition? But there's a lot of science. A lot of science in that degree, though. Not my favorite thing. Right. Like, not my forte by any means. Math and science are not my jam. I briefly, very briefly thought about accounting. Just, I think, parental pressure. Like, love you, mom and dad, but like, it was so ill-fated. Yeah. My mom at one point said that it was in my blood, and so it would be impossible to not do well in these courses. Cut to me not doing well in those courses, and it's like the irony was just so painful.
Yeah, that's a no. That's
It was a hard no. Yeah. I think I thought about doing, I don't know, like, I toyed with the idea of doing like a dance minor. Like, I really, psychology, I went like the psych route for a while. But then I was, I was all over the place. I did like the full, like really questioning all of my life choices through college. I thought about a lot about this when I was like studying abroad in Australia. And I think I just like leaned in a little too hard and like thought we should upset the apple cart in absolutely every way. And then I came back and was like, I'm in business. I'm going to stay in business and it's fine. So certainly had my crises, but stayed with marketing. I'm very happy with that. I got a job out of college at what ended up being like a very cool agency, but I was like so out of my element. We worked on like Walmart, Nestle, like major accounts.
And why then, were you out of your element?
I mean, I just was like thrown into the deep end. I went to a small school and was like this little, I felt like a country bumpkin, like from Ojai. And then I moved to LA and was like, had no friends in LA, like just, you know, threw the girl into the big city kind of thing. I ended up hating it, which is ironic that I live here now. And so I went to A&M for grad school and was like, I gotta get out of here. And then came back and did some more marketing. I worked for a male focused action sports brand, which was again like thrown into the deep end of just crazy. I worked on the men's team as well.
Oh wow.
On their social. So it was like craziest experience. Loved it. Super crazy though. And then I just kind of like kept going along. I've worked in like pretty much every industry at this point. You know, 12 years later, I think I've done almost everything. I'm trying to even think of like what industry.
Yeah, you've worked on many different brands across so many different industries.
I really like to like really mix it up. I think everything social is social in my opinion. And I work with brands that are really strong with what their understanding of their brand is. And so I don't need to be an expert in the industry. I love to test things out. And, you know, we just had a call today. I think there's like a lot of potential to just mix it up. So it's been an interesting journey, but certainly not without its pitfalls. And I had an opportunity to, you know, work at an agency that was really focused on female brands and lifestyle brands. There was a lot of influencer involvement. So it got me back up here in LA. And then, you know, they were transitioning out of doing social and digital. And that was what I had run. I was doing their, I was a digital director. So running their digital team and had the opportunity to just go out on my own. And it's kind of just been 5 years later, like a wild ride since then. My mom was like, hey, you know, I started a business. I could see you starting a business. So potential was there, but I never thought I'd start it at 28. And it's just been kind of like a roll with it every day kind of thing.
So I love that. Talk to us about what it was like for you working in-house and then taking the plunge and all of a sudden going off and starting your own agency. And like, what was that transition like for you?
Because
I know I've recently have just done it. It's scary.
Yeah,
and there's
for sure.
like a lot that you have to think about and on the back end of the business, like just talk me through it. And also like you were so young when you did that too.
I mean, I think it's just sometimes like, you know, youth really works in your favor. Yeah. You're just like, I'm fine.
No fear.
It's okay. Certainly. I mean, I also think I'm a total scaredy cat. So in a lot of ways, like I had to plan it out. I totally credit my family too. Like my parents with their accounting background have been like stand-in CFOs and accountants and bookkeepers
Very
and tax
lucky.
Accountants. Yes, it's a stacked situation over in my house. So I, you know, definitely credit them to helping me. But I think it just was, you know, a series of experiences. I've certainly had, you know, I've been laid off in a company and I think that was a really like big experience for me to know how to like pick yourself back up and
jarring.
To feel really uncomfortable. Yeah. I think that in itself, just the discomfort I've had in different roles in my career have been so essential and weirdest level of experience that like never would have occurred to me that I needed to take that in and that it would make me a stronger person. But then going out to freelance And even in those early years, like, you have those devastations. It's feast or famine all the time. Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing, like, when I'm talking to other freelancers or people that want to jump into freelance or microagency model like myself, you know, you have to be uncomfortable with that feast or famine model. It will never go away. It's not something that you can eliminate unless you get to a really big level, which you're not really in that freelance world anymore. So I just think, like, you have to be so comfortable with discomfort. And it certainly is something I have to remind myself all the time. But I have to remind myself as well the benefits, the freedom, the autonomy, just being able to make my own choices.
I mean, work with who you want to work with.
What brands align with me, or what the clients, you know, what their client dynamic is like, you know, when I wanted to go to Paris this year, like, finding that as a route and making that happen. And I reach out to brands while I was there. You know, if I wanted to build in more of a, I don't even know, that's not bi-coastal, but whatever that looks like, as across two countries. But
international.
Yeah, I guess just international, global company. Like, that's just something I have to just make happen. So I think that's been an incredible experience. But I also really love, like, the operations of my business. So personal, just, like, interest in it, I think, has been something that's kept me going over 5 years. Is, I mean, I don't love accounting still.
Yeah.
Sorry, mom and dad. Yeah, but I think on the whole, like, being able to, like, the ops of my company is just as much of a passion for me as the work that I'm doing with my clients. So that's been able to sustain me. And, you know, I do some fun things, like make sweatshirts for my brand and stuff on the side, and it all kind of works.
So I want to get into, like, the nitty gritty of social, right? And I know you have a general background in marketing, but you're also super fluent in social and what's happening out there across all platforms. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about what you're seeing right now and how, like, what is the landscape? Like, for someone who is not anywhere near as fluent in social and maybe, like, overwhelmed by it. Like, I personally get very overwhelmed by social, because I know the level that it takes to execute well, and the understanding of just operations, essentially, to, like, really make your content work. So I get overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
So, like, what is happening right now in the social world?
I mean, I think there's so much going on at the same time. A lot of things are the same. And I think that that's where people do get overwhelmed, is dissecting, like, what actually is happening and what's relevant to you. You know, there's always new platforms coming up. I mean, I think in the last 2 years, like, we've seen, you know, Be Real and Threads, like, rise and fall. Obviously, Threads happened within 2 weeks. That was like such a fail. And I had a couple clients that were like, wow, we really need to be here. And I was like, can we please just take a breath and slow down? And so much, I mean, when you're on the freelancer side, like, I'm in other freelancer groups and, you know, we chat about what's happening with clients. And I felt like every social media person just took a huge sigh when Threads came out, because we could tell that, like, you have to let something, like, proof. You have to see what's going to happen first. So
I think, you were suspicious that Threads was going to
I thought it was not going to work.
Yeah.
And I also said, I had, like, one client that was really well established that was like, okay, I'll dive into this with you. But across the board, I said, I don't yet feel confident in what this platform will do. And so I'm not going to scramble to be there. You know, especially for clients that aren't winning in a lot of other spaces, that was not going to be top of my list, was to run around to Threads and create new strategy. And I had so many people messaging me, or I saw this chatter of, like, well, what's, like, how do we win? And I'm like, guys, this platform launched, like, last week.
What
do you mean? How do you,
like,
win?
I don't know.
I don't know. It's every man for themselves. Like, we've got huge juggernauts, like, you know, Elle Magazine and stuff that are crushing it, but at that point, it's by chance.
Right.
And I think that's the thing, is that people see these early wins and are like, oh, well, they know the formula and you don't. It's like, we're all learning at the same time. It's, you know, I really think my philosophy has always been social, that it is educated guesses. Mm-hmm. You're not hiring me because I know, I look at your brand and I may be like, oh, I know how to make you, you know, go viral tomorrow.
Right.
That is not how social works. It is about having the toolkit and the information to try something and then analyze it. And that's really, like, a big thing for me, is to look at the results of something and then move forward. Mm-hmm. There's so much, like, trial and error, which is usually why in the first like 3 months of any new client account for me, I always say like, these are the expectations. Like this is trial and error.
Yeah.
That's okay. Failure is okay. As much as a success is okay. It's really about understanding the lay of the land and your current audience, and things will continue to evolve, but being able to take a breath after things have had a chance to simmer and see where, you know, what's rising to the top basically. But to get back to your original question, you know, where are things landing? I think I look at clients that are starting out and they're so overwhelmed. And I say, even if you weren't overwhelmed, but especially if you are, look at where you need to be. I think that I have so many clients that are like, we need to be on TikTok. And I'm like, okay, why?
Yeah.
I feel like there's a whole paragraph that I need beyond we need to be on TikTok.
And let's talk about this for a minute, because you and I have chatted about this several times. And I think that you've got some really good points here and maybe a unique point of view. Can you talk about TikTok and like your feelings around brands having the need to be on TikTok or feeling the pressure or the need to be on TikTok?
Yeah. I think I'm definitely not as common as other social strategists in terms of being pro TikTok. I think that, you know, there are so many brands that are still not owning Instagram, and to pretend that TikTok is superseding Instagram is crazy. Like that's just so not realistic.
Right.
You know, Facebook obviously is like completely dead for brands at this point. I think there are rare cases. No social platform is dead for anyone. Again, it's about finding where your people are. But for the vast majority, Facebook is over for brands. Instagram, though, still the number one priority. And I do stand by that. I think part of it is just the way the platform functions. Part of it is that's where people are the most. And part of it is, you know, the shoppability. I think Instagram has really made and continued to stay on top of finding the synergy between being a platform where people can congregate and enjoy content, but also making it very brand friendly for things like shopping.
Yeah.
Certainly pay to play, but if you pay, you can get what you need.
Yeah.
TikTok is still like Wild West, in my opinion.
Right.
There's still so much going on. I spend so much time on TikTok, so I can't say that I don't love it.
Yeah.
It owns my life. But, I am like the first person to say that.
Can I just say though, like I'm on a bunch of different Slack channels and I feel like every day people are like frantically posting, I just got kicked off of TikTok shop. How do I fix it? What is happening?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, talk about with TikTok, like the common conversations that you're having with brands. Cause I talk to a lot of brands as well too. And like,
it's just,
can you like demyth the
whole TikTok? Yes. Why I'm not pro TikTok. I think it just comes down to content production. Like my personal philosophy with anything social strategy is sustainability. And that starts with content production. So I think so many clients are not prepared for the volume of one channel, nonetheless.
Two. Yeah.
And TikTok is like not even a second. It's like three platforms equivalent.
Right.
You know, we think about Instagram and it's had its ebbs and flows of like professional content, more lo-fi content where it's like iPhone style. You know, it really comes and goes, but we've found a nice equilibrium where like all types of content can really work in the right sense. TikTok, you know, I still feel like you see some things come out. I did like a 2023 trends audit for TikTok, for example, with a TikTok strategist, someone who had longstanding relationships with TikTok people. Like we had really great insight and they were saying like the hi-fi content is going to be the thing. But then at the time it was lo-fi and certainly obviously it's not 2023 anymore, but like it's changing all the time. And it, just the way that TikTok is also changing all social media all the time. So it's really nimble. It's very tough to really land on it. And if you're not prepared to handle content at an Instagram level, which is allows you to pre-plan and, you know, you can succeed with a lot of static imagery. Like if you're not prepared to take that on and really like own that. And when I say own that, I mean, have that be something where you're sustainably have a good cadence of content as well as understanding your core competencies and really like thriving in those spaces, you shouldn't even be talking about TikTok. Like it's just should not even be in your vocabulary, in my opinion. I see so many brands that are like, we have to be there. Yeah. Our client's there. And it's like, okay, well, part of it is that your client or customer is there. But part of it is, how is your impact going to be there? I think that TikTok is really about education or entertainment. And if you can't really do one or both of those really, really well in the TikTok way, you are throwing money down the drain.
Right.
And so I have one client right now that does TikTok, and it's a lower tier priority for them. We are very focused on Instagram, but even still, they really know their content production, and our team is very dialed. And I work with them. I've worked with them for going on 2 years. So they came really well established. They had the systems in place. We layered on really nicely, and we've really owned their Instagram. And through that, we've been able to really leverage, have some, you know, small but successful, you know, wins on TikTok as well. Yeah. But I think they've got it in the right place. And again, they're a really unique situation. It's not a lot of clients, you know, we work with such small stage brands are like nowhere near TikTok. Again, I think there are some brands that like, it's a really rare exception where they're going into TikTok and they're like, this is the channel we're going to own. I think it's a very younger skewing brand in that case. That may be the channel for them over Instagram, maybe, but it's usually, I would say, like, if you have to question it, it's probably not you.
Right.
Rule of thumb.
And I feel like that, like, I feel like there's like going to be people listening that are like, oh, okay.
Yeah. This is your sign. Like, you I'm giving you permission.
This is your sign that you don't have to you be don't have on to. TikTok.
Yeah. You know? Really don't have to.
Are you dreaming of launching your own CPG brand, but you're just unsure about where to start? I see so many founders waste time and money trying to figure it out alone without a playbook or a clear strategy on how to have a game-changing debut. On February 26th, I'm hosting a free workshop called Launch Smarter, the four phases of building a CPG brand. And in this workshop, we'll detail the four mission-critical phases of building a food and beverage CPG business that will set you up for a head-turning launch. Jam-packed with insider knowledge, easy-to-follow actionables, and strategic planning, this workshop has everything you need to go from concept to shopping cart. Don't waste valuable hours and money making the mistakes everyone makes in the beginning. Save yourself the time and headache with my proven playbook that I've launched hundreds of products with and dozens of brands. Create a food and beverage CPG brand that attracts repeat customers, buyers, and investors, making you a press and brand partnership magnet. No BS, just a clear-cut path to success. Don't wait. Space is limited. There's a link in the show notes to sign up.
I want to segue into talking about brands now and how brands, you know, should be showing up on social media and starting on social media.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've worked with you on several brands, just like really laying the foundation, but like, how should you start if you're a brand that is literally just getting going? You know, It's All Happening works with like super early stage brands that maybe as we're working together and building a go-to-market strategy, they're literally just grabbing their Instagram handle for the first time.
Yeah.
So like, what are the core things you should be doing, to set yourself up for like sustainable growth and success?
Yeah. I mean, I think again, it's about, to me, systems. I think social seems really like creative heavy, but especially for the way my mind works and what I think I've been able to be successful with my clients with is structure.
Yeah.
And I think it's the really unsexy side of marketing in general, but structure is where I see so many clients come to me and be like, we've had marketing, whether it's in-house or other agencies, and it like potential was there, but like it didn't work. Truly, that's where they're living and dying is structure. So creating the systems, what's your content production look like? What does your marketing calendar look like, especially for our clientele that are so early on? You know, you don't have maybe a marketing calendar. So like we shouldn't even really be talking about social, or we should be doing like that kind of stopgap social of like really, really basic stuff just to placeholder things for when you're ready. But marketing calendars, having internal planning, having content production, again, like do your photo shoots in advance, like get a ton of content to start. Having anyone even near your social without having those baseline things is just, you're not ready to go. I think there's this, I think people feel like we have to be there and like there's this gun to their head.
Yeah.
And you can only make one first impression. And if you don't do it right, we can certainly walk things back, but the impression was made. So I think I would really rather have it be focused on getting things set up in the right way. And if there are some things we need to put out to get things started, like I love a intro grid, you know, we've done these on a few of our clients where it's like a 6 or 9 grid of just something kind of vibey just to set the stage. Do that if you need to. I question if you really need to do that even, but like if that makes you feel comfortable and lets people know that you're coming soon, or create a really cool, like vibey reel or something to like kind of give people the gist of who you are, but let something sit and really plan things out the right way. And make a splash when you launch. I think those are really big things. And again, figure out where you need to be. Like, what is your customer doing? I love a competitor audit too. I think that's like a really strong start.
Yes. Look, I know. I think you've really opened my eyes up to the comp audit as it relates to this. I always do when I work with clients. I mean, competitor audit, it's literally the first thing you do.
Absolutely.
And it's like, well, hello, of course you need to do it on social media as well too. Like, it totally makes sense. You have a go-to-market strategy for like how you're going to deal with your sales and distribution. You basically, you need the same thing as well too for social.
And I think that's the thing. I think what I would love to see evolution-wise with my industry is not even really about us, but people looking at social as an industry, is there's so much expectation on what social is going to do for your brand, but the budgets aren't really there. The investment in headcount is not there, or just external expert resources. And things like competitor audits, like that, like the rest of the world, I think understands social's importance, but we haven't backed that up with the right infrastructure to get it there. Yeah. And I think that's something I would love to see happen in my industry, is like we get the cred that we deserve. And, you know, with me, I have a background in analytics. So I do approach things from looking at numbers. Like there is, it's like I said before, it's an educated guess, but it's backed by science. And I think that's the thing, is like, we need to look at, there is a method to the madness. And so I think things like competitor audit start that process.
Yeah.
And I think give legitimacy to what your work is too. I think as a freelancer, I love doing that, to give that to key stakeholders so that they understand the lay of the land. I think it helps us speak the same language as well, of like what we're seeing in your competitive set on Instagram or on TikTok doing. I'll certainly look at someone's competitors that they did for a go-to-market strategy, but it might be different on Instagram.
Yeah.
I've looked at beverage brands and then picked a snack brand that was doing something differently because it made more sense to their target and the type of content I thought they were going to do. So competitor audit is a relative term, but I think that's a really great starting point, probably before you even really do something like a 9 grid or anything else, like really know where you're going and what is your customer looking for. Because the question you need to answer when you're creating social strategy is, what's the value someone's going to get from your content? Because you may have followers that aren't your direct customer. When you look at the sales funnel, you know, social is right at the top. Yeah. There are certainly strategies that pull you down the funnel, like, you know, shoppable products and things like that. But social in an organic sense is the top of your funnel and is the very first line of defense, which is why, as you've heard me say, I call your social the website before your website.
Yeah.
So I think looking at, you know, what's the value someone's going to get from your content? Are they going to be laughing? Are they entertained? Are they getting some sort of education about your product or what your product's going to help them do?
So there's so much tips and best practices out there. What should brands listen to? Like how do you know?
I mean, I think I love the like, here's the 10 tips, or like, you know, here's this analysis.
We all love to gobble those up.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Don't we all love that? I mean, to simplify social down and like, this is going to be like the, you know, the torpedo that's going to like really take your social to the next level. I'm like, I love that idea.
Yeah. But how to launch your brand in four steps.
Oh my gosh.
Did you know it was only going to take you 4 things?
I mean, yeah, it sounds so peaceful when you think about it that way. I think you take those notes, and I like to look at the what's coming up multiple times. You know what I mean? Like ingest all of that stuff. If that, first of all, A, makes you feel better, go for it. Love that for you. But B, if you're seeing the same tip coming up over and over again, I think that you've obviously struck onto something.
So you've worked across so many industries on the social side. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about CPG and as it compares to other industries and how CPG is dealing with social. And like, I'm so curious your take on like what the different industries look like as it relates to social.
Yeah, my scorecard
on industries. Please.
I mean, obviously beauty and fashion, like A plus. Like they've really have like made
they get it.
Yeah, they get it. They're here for it. Certainly, like when it comes to budgets, I think they can still be very stingy. Like fashion brands like have very high expectations, but they're pinching pennies sometimes.
Yeah.
But overall, I think beauty, like, I think we can all unanimously agree that they are, like, setting the standard.
Right.
They've really understood not just how to do really great content or be engaging, but, you know, some brands are using social as a tool for product development. Like, I love Verst. And, I mean, Glossier was, like, the original gold standard of pulling in social tools to develop their product line. So I think, you know, they really have set the standard for social. And fashion, I think just by the nature of being a visual brand or a visual industry, you know, has really also kept up a high standard. I have to say CPG does not get a good scorecard. I feel like...
Why do you think... What's going on there? What's up with that?
I mean, I just think that... I don't know if it's just food, like early marketing teams or CEOs just like didn't think it was needed because it's not something you can experience via social, which, you know, I'm not really sure where it fell in the original, like, you know, the...
I mean, I can tell you a little bit about that.
I'm sure. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, I'm sure from your end, being on the other side of things, that you have probably had
tons
of
insight. Well, retail. People are...
Yeah.
People have... Founders and CEOs have struggled to spend money on digital if they were or are a retail-only brand.
Yeah.
Because they don't see... They struggle to spend if they don't see direct ROI.
Yeah. Right? And I think that's the thing is like marketing is always an expense.
Yeah.
So something like social where it's like, again, that top of the funnel, like very, you're in it for the long haul and you can't directly tie, you know, there's no causation on organic social in that way.
Right.
They've certainly come a long way in terms of like Google Analytics and things that pull in better, you know, data to support the success of social. But I just think, again, like, you know, CPG has been a brick and mortar industry. So digital and social.
I mean, I don't know, though. There's so many brands now that are like viral.
Absolutely. And I'm saying, like, in, you know,
and finding insane success.
Absolutely.
From like really leaning into social, which I love.
I think that's the thing. I think there, I was just going to say, I think there's a new crop of younger brands that are coming out, first of all, by a younger founder.
Yeah.
We've got founders that are now Gen Z. Like, you know, they're really young. And I think that they're thriving in a social.
Yeah, because they're so fluent in it. And it's like, it's just now, it's like,
there's no like culture shift there. Like they've grown up in that. One of my favorite CPG brands to talk about is Poppy. I feel like they have done such a good job with their social. They're founder forward. They have leveraged their time on Shark Tank. They, you know, really built that, not only just like being on a show and having that be something that was like kind of tangible to kick off their brand, but that kind of, you know, like grassroots way of building their brand. Yeah. They've kept that ethos by, you know, launching things via their social channels. Their TikTok is great.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to look at a CPG brand that's thriving on TikTok, I think they're always the one I reference. So I really like them. And like I said, I think there are a lot of like new crop of CPG brands that are thriving in a social first strategy.
Yeah.
But I think on the whole, the industry is still run by that old school mentality. I mean, like I go back to like what I learned in marketing school of like how we measured the quote unquote success of like a billboard, which was, I remember learning that in grad school and thinking that's insane that you're counting the number of cars and that's supposed to be an impression, like wild to me that's someone paid a lot of money for that. I mean, obviously billboards now is a vibe. Like that's a totally different strategy
these
days. I love
out of home.
Yeah. I love that stuff. But like, you know, when you think about when you learn it in the traditional sense, like it's madness that was more accepted than paying for social. Mm-hmm. And I still think like, even though you've got these brands that are coming out in social in a really big way and they are targeting a younger audience, the budgets aren't there. Like I really want to see CPG really lean into these things. And there certainly is more nuance to it too. CPG, you have a little bit more legal things you need to worry about, like consumables.
Well,
you have
to be careful. And oftentimes the margins can be super tight.
And that's the thing too, I think.
Especially at the beginning and, and the budgets can tend to be like really, really tight when it comes to marketing that's not retail related.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I get it. I understand how it comes to be that, you know, you there is so much outlay of cash to get into multiple stores. It can't just be one. Like, you know, there's so much in distribution that's really essential. But you do see those brands that have kind of decided that social is going to be their thing and they are winning in a big way. So I think there's a lot of opportunity
agree.
There.
I agree with you. I think that the brands that are not really leaning into social are quite frankly are like, are missing out.
Yeah.
And the reason they're not spending is because they have, you know, margin issues and I mean, this isn't really a marketing conversation, but like if you have margin issues, like you need to really like reevaluate what you're doing because you're just in this day and age, you have to be able to spend money in a reasonable way on social. You just do, you know?
Well, and I think, and you'll even see these big brands that don't have, they have the budgets and they don't have great strategy. So it's not just about, we don't have the money.
Exactly.
It's the, it's their, they don't want to invest because they don't think it's worth it, but they're still doing it. And I really, that's where I think like,
people are half-assing it.
Like if you're just like putting out crappy social, like
don't bother,
Just don't be there. Like as if in there's, and I know too, from being on the hiring end, both at both as the hirer and the one being hired, you in those instances, it's an underfunded coordinator or manager at best. That is being asked to copyright, create content.
Yeah.
So they're a content producer. They have to have senior level oversight of the strategy. They have to know how to do these, you know, oftentimes multiple platforms because a CEO said, if we're going to do social, we need to be on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, X, like all these things. So it's really, that's what disappoints me is again, there's a ton of expectation.
Right.
And there's not the resources and therefore the funding to really do it right. So then it's like it becomes this vicious cycle where someone's saying, well, we're not seeing success. So why would we invest more? And I'm like, well, you've all you're doing is throwing your money down the drain because the algorithm does not forget. And I think that's the thing is you can change the algorithm's mind eventually. But she's like a scorned lover. Like she does not forget. So the the more crappy content you do, the more shitty result you're going to get. Like you just, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I think that's the thing too, is marketing is such an understood space.
Yeah.
And social is like the biggest example of that. Like it's still, you know, we're, I mean, I'm 12 years in my career, so we're about 12 years into social as like a paid profession.
Yeah.
And I feel just as misunderstood now
as you did 12 years ago.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, people look at me and they're like, well, don't you just like post the Instagram? And I'm like, oh my God, if you don't understand the like 15
there's
people
so
that touch
much
this.
More that go into it. Yeah.
Well, and the amazing professionals that I work with that, you know, their experience and, you know, what they've put into their careers. Like I, you know, work with incredible graphic designers or videographers, even to produce a video. Sometimes those are high production shoots, like all of the people that touch that, like it just feels, it makes my heart hurt a little bit because you totally undervalued literally probably 15 people that have really put their heart and soul and tons of years of experience into one TikTok and it's already going to have about a 24-hour life cycle. So like, don't take us down anymore. Like give us a little bit of credibility. We're tired. You know, like that's the thing is like, we get up and we're like, okay, cool. Do it again. Like do it the next day. You know, there's luckily the algorithm
has
changed.
So much that goes into it.
There's a lot. And someone listening is probably like, oh my God, this is why it gets so scary. Hire the right person and let that be their problem.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing is like, I feel like there's a certain part of me that gets a little bit bitter because I think there, especially in COVID, was all of these people that were like, you don't have to have any experience and be in social. And I think that that's also the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Sure.
Like that's where we've done our own industry wrong is that it seems like it's a low barrier or no barrier to entry career that, and there are certainly people that just have like an innate understanding of social. Don't get me wrong, but as someone who's put a ton of education and experience into my career, I also get a little disappointed because I see a lot of these early stage brands that hire someone who really has no business doing what they're doing.
Sure.
For someone that doesn't also know, like their brand is still being built.
Yeah.
I think it's different when you're talking to a company that really understands who they are. You can probably get away with someone who's a little less experienced, but I see so many young brands that don't have any understanding of like really what they're going to end up being. It's all still very malleable. And then they hire someone who's one of those people that has all this experience with social, quote unquote, but they're like right. 2 years in. They have no historical knowledge of the platform, which yes, it's educated guesses, and the historical knowledge of how the platform has evolved from the days where we could post one static photo to the length of reels changing year to year and like what's allowed on the platform. Right. Like if you don't know that, you can't predict what could come up. It's part of why I knew that Threads was going to be complete nothing
yeah.
in a few weeks. It's like you look right. at that and you're like, okay, what's the longevity of this? Historical knowledge is so essential. So yeah. take out my background in data or, you know, having that marketing base. My historical knowledge of these platforms alone is why I can be successful. And I think that that's where I see a lot of brands being like, you're just too expensive or we just don't have the budget. But you're really, you're pinching pennies to spend dollars at that point because yeah. you're going to waste so much money with the wrong content strategy or the content's great and it doesn't go out the right way. It's not seen by the right people. And you could have been more effective with
yeah.
a little bit more budget and doing it the right way.
Yeah.
And set
yourself
up. Well,
I think what you're saying right now, I think goes back to like, you know, it really sort of like sums up my whole philosophy,
yeah.
Like my thesis on,
yeah.
on brands.
Yes.
It's like you just, if you are in a super budget conscious mm-hmm. situation, which so many people and so many brands are, yeah. and that's okay.
Totally.
But you have to like work with people that know what they're doing and have yeah. gone down this road before mm-hmm. versus, and then maybe you just work with them a little less.
And that's what I was just going to say is like, I'm the first person to say, if you don't have the budget for me full bore, totally fine.
Right.
I would rather finance a sustainable solution. I feel like I sound like a broken record, but that's like really what I've, you know, the hill I want to die on for
yeah.
what my clients do. Or if someone passes on me, like, that's fine. Let me help you figure out what your sustainable solution looks like.
Yeah.
But yeah. I
spending think more on mm-hmm. like having people with expertise is so much more valuable
yeah.
than hiring, you know, an agency or more junior people
totally.
That just don't have the playbook and
it's
the
almost
experience.
Like quality over quantity too. Totally. Like I see that they're like, okay, totally. We need to pump out 7 times a week and like we need to be on story 7 times a week. Okay, well, again, that's a lot of content. Do you actually really, do you have the need? Do you have the demand for that? And can you sustainably manage that? So,
yeah.
you know, I think again, if you're not experienced, I don't know that you can navigate that conversation. And I look at that and I'm like, I would rather you pull back. And I have a lot of clients that post 3 times a week because that's what's sustainable for them. And we are very intentional about that content. Would I like to see them get to more? Absolutely. Do I have some of those top tier clients that we are on all cylinders? 7 posts, you know, sometimes more a mm-hmm. week on feed. You know, we've got stories going up, multi-slide, you know, 3 to 5 slides per story, 7 days a week. Like we are really pumping out, like the one I mentioned earlier, we're on yeah. TikTok with them a few times a week. Like that's gold star, but they had to work there. You know,
yeah.
their community is in the hundreds of thousands at this point and we've worked there, but they didn't start that way.
Yeah.
So I think again, like, can you look at your resources and say, maybe we go with the more expensive person that is really going to lay the foundation and we pull back on what the volume is,
mm-hmm.
or are we, you know, working with them in a really limited capacity? And when I have potential clients say, I can't afford your services at this certain rate, I always love to come back with like, let's find something else. Can we do a project base? Can I do your competitor audit and social playbook? Like I personally have worked hard to craft options that can serve any need because I think it's about finding what's going to be the best solution for the brand.
Yeah.
And if that's me long-term, great. If it's me short-term, totally fine. Like
yeah.
they're, you know, I think you put out and you're going to get back good. So, I think it's just a matter of like finding the right solution. So for someone listening, I would say too, like if you are listening to this and think, oh my gosh, I can't afford something like this.
Yeah.
Or I can't afford someone with 12 years of experience. I would love if I had a potential client that said that and came back with what solutions can you offer me that are going to help me lay the proper foundation and maybe we can come back in the future.
Yeah.
And I've had those clients and I'm like, A+, someone cooked here. Like yeah. someone told you
that you should ask this question and you remember it. And I'm so proud. Like, I just want to be like, bravo. I will make whatever you need work because they're asking the right questions.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, if you had to sum up what we've talked about, is like, ask the right questions.
Totally.
You don't need to be everywhere. You don't need to be doing everything with everyone. You need to like know your brand enough and really stay true to it. And give it, you know, really take the time to think that through as much as you do on any other go-to-market strategy.
Yeah.
You know, like you said before, people spend so much time doing Nielsen audits of their customer and all of that, but then they feel this panic and they rush. They don't
truly uncover what's happening with social. Yeah.
Yeah. So find the right resource that's able to drive the ship. I think that's the thing is it's really no knock on junior people. I certainly have some junior people. I stick with pretty advanced resources myself, but there is certainly a need for a more junior resource, especially when you work in a multi-person team in-house. Like, hire the coordinator.
Yeah.
But they don't run your strategy. That's insane. Yeah. And that's not fair to them. Like, they need that time to learn their piece. I served as a coordinator in teams and learned about community management. Mm-hmm. And then I built up, like, every person down to the lowest paid person still is an expert in their space, but they need to be appropriately segmented to really like own their respective space.
Right.
So, you know, I've been on teams that are multi-person. I'm in client teams now that are multi-person, and I respect my, you know, the community manager that I work with, like they know their stuff, like, and that's their space. That's their territory. They tell me what's working and what's not. And I digest that with my strategy brain of what we need to change. And I go to my client and say, you know, your brand best. How do we take this tactic and make it work for your brand? Like, again, every piece of the puzzle is just as important as the other, but I think it's about hiring the right resources. And when you can't have a multi-person team, you especially need to know someone that can do a little bit of everything. But my one caveat with that is that no brand is exempt from needing to hire, in my opinion, multiple resources. I think that is also like the greatest lie that social industry has told.
Agree with you. Yeah. Yeah.
I have so many people. Yeah. I see the job description and it's like
And
manager level again at best. And the list of roles and responsibilities. I'm like,
it's so,
would you do that?
Yeah. It's
also, great. I wouldn't
setting up the person for failure.
Well, and if someone says they can do that, I'm instantly sus. I'm like, I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't believe you. Yeah. Because I know what goes in. Like, I can't copyright. I'm the first person to say unicorn. I'm not a copywriter. But I also think that if you can say what your strengths are and also call it your weaknesses, I trust you more.
Yeah.
Like if you can say, I'm the first person to say I'm not a good copywriter, but I know what I know. Like I really truly stand, like I dare someone to have a better process than me. And if they do, I want to learn. Yeah. So it's like the things that I do own really well, like my clients have full confidence in me and what I can do. And I know how to find good resources because I go to other people that also say I know my niche.
Right.
So I think that's a thing too, is like, you know, I think there's this, again, these people that have flooded into this industry that have kind of given everyone this impression that you can find that like Swiss Army knife.
Right.
And I certainly, again, I hate to speak in absolutes. There are certainly the exceptions.
Yeah.
But almost always you are the rule and you're not the exception.
Yeah.
So
I know. I feel bad for people. I hear it from founders. We just need like a 22-year-old scrappy content creator.
Yeah.
And they think they're gonna go from, you know, 10 followers to hundreds of thousands or, you know, views or whatever, like just like that.
Yeah.
And they want to put it all on like a, you know, someone who's,
and pay them like $2
super junior and pay them literally nothing.
Well,
it's for those, too, for those people, like,
if that's you, I'm so sorry.
Listen up.
Your CEO owes you like a stipend for coffee because you're running around like your hair is on fire. Like, it's just not fair. It's not fair to anyone.
I know.
No one, that's the thing. No one wins.
Yeah, nobody wins.
Literally no one wins.
And the strategy will fail. Like, the strategy will
fail. Well, that thing is, and they usually come to me and they're like, well, we've had this person, and they're kind of like talking shit about the person. Like, well, they said they could do this. And I'm like, you believed them.
Yeah.
They believed them. That's the thing. They're not lying. They're lying to themselves. And they're doing their damnedest to get you that. But they don't, anyone who's going to do all that for you is either well underpaid.
Yeah.
Or doesn't know what they're doing.
Totally.
I just really haven't met anyone that doesn't fall into those two categories.
So I love you so much. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. I love our conversation.
I know we could talk about this for hours.
I know. We really could sit here forever. Yeah. Until next time, my dear.
Thank you so much.
If you liked what you heard, it would mean so much if you follow and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. For tips and advice on your food and beverage CPG brand, you can find us on Instagram at It's All Happening Co. or visit our website at itsallhappeningagency.co to be the first to hear about workshops, courses, and in-person events and freebies. Until next week.